The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
All right, everybody, come on in. We got a lot going on. You think? On any given day, the plate is full just of stuff in the news. But today, the plate is full in terms of history. And my heart is full remembering being 11 years old, 49 years ago today, this afternoon and tonight. Of course, it was Americans, which makes us extra proud, but it was mankind landing on the moon 49 years ago today. I remember the joy of that time. I embrace my joy of this day, first and foremost, because of God who's in control, the amazing family I have, the amazing gig I have, the amazing people I get to work with, and the resiliency that conservatism is showing with real conservatives backing this president, not mindlessly or blindly or like, oh, we must obey, we must follow. No. It's because we've got the brain power and the insight to realize what Trump's trying to do with Vladimir Putin. And maybe you can think it's smart and maybe you don't, and maybe it's a little too convivial for you, and that's all fine. But so many of the smart kids, the so-called smart kids, I said, oh, this is a betrayal. This is, you know, he's subjugating us to Putin. You know, he got rolled by Putin. Come on, man. Come on. And that narrative that they thoroughly expected to take hold, this was going to be the weekend of Trump's undoing. Instead, it's the weekend of Trump's invitation. He apparently is in the process of inviting Putin to Washington for a summit in the fall. It's Christmas every day. And it's Friday.
Wow! I feel good. I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
I feel good.
I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good.
I would not.
So good. So good. I got you. Wow!
You ready? Come on, man. We're going to party on this one. Come on now. You with me? All right. Let's go. One, two.
Enjoying with particular gusto today's musical birthdays. So on the occasion of one of them, Carlos Santana, we're going to go to Festival, the 1977 album that I guess that's probably about the seventh Santana album. I'm rolling through my sophomore year of college. This one's among the eight tracks in my player. Little Try a Little Harder from Carlos Santana. And the 37 people are in his band at any given moment. Yeah, there's going to be, for you young whippersnappers, whose wheelhouse is kind of the early 90s. And it's funny because it feels generational. You know, because 1990, 91... You know, the era of, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, obviously. I'm 33. I mean, it's not like I'm old and crotchety yet. But I guess the real wheelhouse, because as you can tell, I am very much a child of the 70s. When the 70s began, I was 12. When they ended, I was 22. And so that's pretty formative, I guess. And for you, I'm thinking that your big Nirvana and Soundgarden and Pearl Jam fans are probably about 15 to 20 years younger than I am. So for you kids, for you youngsters, we've got some Soundgarden and some Pearl Jam because we have a couple of birthdays. And it's kind of funny to take a look at, you know, whose birthday happens to be on the July 20th moon landing anniversary. And one of them is Stone Gossard, guitarist for Pearl Jam, and the late Chris Cornell, who passed away last year, front man for Soundgarden. So some of those wonderful tunes will from the George H.W. Bush presidency will be strewn across today's bumper library. But having invoked an interesting situation, and this is going to be interesting in a number of ways, because I'm going to spend a moment here, and I have complete audio of the complete segment of Judge Jeanine Pirro on The View, where she is just attacked by Whoopi Goldberg and snarked upon to no effect by Anna Navarro. Whatever. Got that in a minute. But I do have some history to walk you through about 49 years ago today. But with a special take on that, we are in Plano. And Bob, hi. It's a pleasure to have you.
Hi, Mark.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Well, I am. I'm celebrating my birthday today.
How'd that work out for you?
Oh, I was completely ignored on my 10th birthday.
That's kind of
a lot of issues there.
Does that have lasting ripples that torment you even today?
Oh yes.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's almost worse than the Christmas birthday, or as I call it, screwed out of a present day. But you're 10, and you're 10. You're 10. It's the zenith of birthdays. It's like I'm 10. It's double digits. It's awesome. So instantly, you've identified yourself as a couple of years younger than me. But so that means we have a generational similarity in viewing the event. But tell me, I mean, obviously, where were you? Where were you living? And how to just really, as the world paid attention to everything but you, maybe your own household paid attention to everything but you, how did that day roll out?
Well, I grew up in Richardson, and it was one of those deals that just pretty much that was the big, big story going on that day, obviously.
Of course.
And yes. I was standing there saying, it's my birthday, and being called shut up, men are walking on the moon.
I'm sorry. Well, but that's 10 o'clock at night. I mean, it was a full day thing. America woke up, Texas woke up, Richardson woke up, Camp Springs, Maryland woke up where I was, and it was like, it's a coming. It's a coming. I'm not even leaving the house. I'm just going to lock down, get that old dusty remote out. Well, it wasn't dusty at the time. It was new. And fire up one of the three channels and watch the coverage all day as they grew closer and closer to the moon landing, which was middle of the afternoon, and then the moonwalk that was that night. So ordinarily, did Chuck E. Cheese exist in 69? I don't know. We weren't really going to be having the friends over for ice cream cake or anything like that. But here's the thing. It's not like it was a surprise. Surprise moon landing. And it was a Sunday. Couldn't they have done something like Saturday?
Well, it was.
Sorry.
But it's been pretty interesting having it tied to your birthday all these years.
I'll bet so.
A number of years ago, I had the opportunity to meet Alan Bean.
Oh, my.
And was given a book of his prints autographed by him. And so I had a chance. And I've got a picture of my wife and I with him. That was very neat, and got to tell him that story.
Was he sympathetic, even partially guilty?
No.
Let me tell everybody. Alan Bean was the fourth man to walk on the moon. The very next mission, Apollo 12, he and Pete Conrad walked the surface of the moon after most of America stopped paying attention. But I didn't, and I'm guessing Bob didn't either. And Alan Bean, Fort Worth's own, a product of Pascal High School. And Alan Bean passed away just a couple of months ago. And I replayed on that occasion our extensive conversation with him. What a magnificent man. What a magnificent American hero. And you know what? As we throw around all this love and all this gratitude and all this recognition, there's one thing I want to say above all else, Bob, and that's happy birthday.
Thank you, Mark.
You bet, buddy. Thanks. The July 20th birthday. I know someone who might have had a similar experience. And you owe him a lot, or at least I hope you think you owe him a little something. There is somebody who turned, I don't even know how old he is. 66, 67. I think he's about 6-7 years older. I always think everybody's younger than they are, including me. Anyway, though, but for this gentleman, you and I are not talking today. You don't know I exist, or at least not in the convivial way that we have become involved with each other here with the Texas flavor. That would be Tyler Cox, who came here. Here's a small story, as if anything is a small story for me. It is like New Year's 1990, and I had secured my first fairly major market. I was in Memphis and took a job in Tampa, St. Petersburg. It's like, ooh, top 20 market. My dad's retired down there. This is awesome. This is going to be great. So I get there, and about 12 weeks in, the station fires everybody. Everybody. Format change. You know, the only thing that's certain in life is change, and they felt terrible about it. I'm sure because they had just brought me in. So they gave me a little pile of money so I wasn't dealing with in a position of desperation. But I was suddenly instantly available for any gig that opened. And I had always had a fanciful idea of going back to the town where I grew up, Washington, D.C., and it's Maryland suburbs. But you go back to D.C. to do work in D.C. I'm in talk radio. Seems like kind of a nice fit, right? And so I had peppered a station that I had grown up listening to, WRC and WMAL, with letters saying, hey, I'm a talk show guy now, and I'm a local guy, and blah, 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 woohoo. And no one cared. It's just like, yeah, whatever. So interestingly, there was, again, the only thing certain in radio life is change, right? And so they got a new program director at WRC in Washington, whom they had acquired from Boston. That was the most recent place Tyler had worked. So he came in to WRC in Washington and wanted to freshen up the station, give it some, it had developed a kind of a stodgy, dusty appeal, and they wanted to kind of young it up a little bit, but not in a frivolous way. Just wanted to get some talk show hosts that were like under 80. It just seemed like a good idea. So my tape arrives in the mail that I had sent to a previous program director. And Tyler looks at that and says, who's this guy? Pops it in, listens to me, and I don't pretend that the skies open up. Like, oh, but he gets in touch with me. And I'm down there sitting amid boxes in Clearwater, Florida, wondering where my next gig's going to be. And I was like, hey, would you like to come up here and work in D.C.? And I said, I think so. So in May of 1990, I went up and started. It's kind of neat being back in the old hometown. But it was great, and yet it was weird. A couple of things hit me immediately. Number one, Washington is the Maryland. It was very exciting growing up as a suburban kid in D.C. It was amazing. It was great. Coming back to try to work as a functioning adult, you realize what a pain in the neck Washington is, how expensive it is, how ridiculous it is. And it's like, wow, the nostalgia is kind of getting eaten alive here a little bit. And the next thing that you realize is that local talk radio, kind of like what we're doing together right now, not that big a deal in D.C. D.C. is very national government, very broad brush, very 30,000 foot. The stuff I would care about, stuff from Prince George's County, Maryland, Fairfax County, Virginia, stuff going on in Northeast D.C., local stories, cab drivers. But no, it just didn't work. It just didn't work so well. But I kept plugging and I kept plugging, and we did well. And we were trying to catch the big dog, WMAL, the big ABC owned station that ran Rush Limbaugh. And we were gaining on him. And then Tyler Cox, the man who hired me, the man whose birthday it is today, the man to whom I own everything, abandoned me, brought me into the office and said, I'm out of here. I'm going to the station in DFW, the ABC-owned station that runs Rush Limbaugh. So I said, well, good luck to you. And here's the thing. He said to me, want to come with me? And I said, I'm good. I know what? Remember, this is 92. He'd been there. We'd worked together a couple of years. And then he, blows off for the bright lights, big city, and the better talk market of DFW. Thank God, a couple of years later, after I pulled my head out, because it was like, I'm back in the town where I grew up. I think we're really going to catch WMAL. I'm here. I've only been here a couple of years. I feel like I should give it a little bit more. And I did. And I had a good time. But I just some truths began to be known to me. And that is that success and happiness mean more than geography. And the chance to come back to my native Texas, come on, man, let's go. So I got with Tyler. The opening still existed. And in March of 1994, note your calendars, 25 years ago, next March, come here. So I trust that has worked out well for everybody. It sure has for me. All righty, 8:23. Let me pause and come back and set a little bit more of a stage of what really went on 239,000 miles away from here on July 20th, 1969. Mark Davis, 8:23, 6:60 a.m. The answer.
There's no one else who needs to know. She tells us
1994. Third Pearl Jam album, Vitalogy.
Back when she was smooth and strong.
The Greatness of Better Man. Shall we do the chorus together and get into news on time? Let's do it, everybody. One, two, three, four. Shake your head around like Eddie Vedder. Ah, what a great record that is. Oh, my gosh, my gosh. Okay, so let's cruise into Gordon Griffin's world, see what's going on in the news. Then we'll pop back the other side. History and recollections of July 20th, 1969, the moon landing. History and recollections of the last 4 days. What a week it has been. Woohoo! Enjoying all of it with you. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 830. Here's Gordon. From Teaser and the Fire Cat, the greatness of Cat Stevens.
I've been running a long time on this traveling ground, wishing hard to
and what Cat Stevens packed into 1970, yes, just to 75. At the ages of 22, 23, 24, 25, doggone it, man. So Teaser, that is Bitter Blue from Teaser and the Fire Cat. You want to know what was on Teaser and the Fire Cat? And this is right after T for the Tillerman, which had Wild World. Oh, that wasn't a big hit at all. But Teaser and the Fire Cat had Moonshadow, Peace Train, Morning Has Broken, Hello, and a couple of other things that don't get played nearly enough, but they're about to. Cat Stevens turns 70 tomorrow. Now, a few years ago, had an Islamic conversion known as Yusuf Islam, and still makes records under sort of the mononym Yusuf, and they're pretty good. In fact, they're quite good. He has not spent... I mean, it's kind of funny. I mean, you take the various people in sports or music who have Islamic conversions. I am Mr. Religious Freedom. You can do whatever you want. Obviously, that's become somewhat newsworthy in the last, 17 years. And he's spent almost, no time beating people to death with his wish to spread the caliphate by the sword or anything like that. So I'm pretty prepared not to care. But and in fact, my favorite thing, I think, is just to remember when T for the Tillerman came out, that was right after the moon landing. It was 1970. T for the Tillerman comes out, and then Teaser and the Fire Cat, and then an amazing, amazing album called Catch Bull at Four. Just remarkable, remarkable stuff. Incredible musicianship, incredible writings, is that plural? And this deep, resonant, whiskey-throated voice when dude was like 22, 23, 24. Just pretty amazing. Saw him one time at the Capitol Center in Largo, Maryland. probably about 1975 or six, and it was something. It was, in fact, here's the one thing. Big concert crowds are kind of wild, and boy, if you want to learn a little something about some Cat Stevens history, get the Carly Simon biography, Boys in the Trees, autobiography, Boys in the Trees, because before the whole James Taylor thing happened, like right before, she hung out pretty exclusively with Cat Stevens. In fact, Anticipation is largely about anticipation of, seeing him when they were romantically involved. And so I think, you know, the Cat Stevens career started with small, intimate club dates. And I think he tried to carry that forward into a concert venue with 18,000 people. And it didn't, like, always work out so well. And so he tried to bring a crowd of 18,000 that was probably stoned out of its mind to a period of intimate quietness with an amazing, amazing song called The Boy with the Moon and Star on His Head. And it is best performed in an atmosphere of pensive silence. So he's rolling out with just him on a stool with an acoustic guitar doing The Boy with the Moon and Star on His Head. And the crowd begins to, first you get the occasional, "Woo, yeah!" which actually performers do like. It is a compliment. But, you know, if you're, you know, in Wings Over America, it's Mark's concert memories, a 3-hour tour. McCartney and Wings roll in to the same Capitol Center. I lived in that building in 1976. And sits down and does some acoustic Beatles stuff and does Blackbird. And again, everybody pretty well stoned out of their mind. Not me, not yet. And it's like, "Woo, yeah, Beatles, yeah." And he didn't care. Just go with it. Cat Stevens, not in the mood to go with it. Stops the song down. Boom. "Excuse me, could we refrain?" What? It just grew extremely uncomfortable, because if you don't have 100% obedience to this, I mean, if one guy, and it, and then the clap, and it's wow, it actually took a, if the crowd came to know, that the song simply was just not going to happen unless everybody behaved. And it was like peer pressure. And finally, everybody shut up. Here, let me give you the feel of this. This is from, again, the incredible genius of Catch Bullet 4.
A gardener's daughter stopped me on my way on the day I was to wed.
Now imagine this.
It is you who I wish to share my body with, she said.
Woo! Yeah! Rock and roll!
Yeah, I could see how he might
find a dry place under the sky with a flower for a bed.
Now, it's a 6-minute record and a 300-page novel in so doing. And then everybody starts clapping, and he just stops down, just...
"Excuse me, could we refrain?"
And then after about another 5 minutes, they refrained. All righty. Welcome to Mark's Memories. Now let's go to stuff that actually matters. And that would be 49 years ago today, tonight. Let me let somebody into this before I share a little bit of some of what really, really happened. We are in for, it's not like there's, please, there's no deep secrets, but I just want you to kind of, because most of you, and I understand, and that's fine. Yeah, we landed on the moon and then they walked. Yes, they did. But wow, I'm going to share a couple of things here in a minute. In Fort Worth, Tom, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Yeah, back then my aunt and uncle didn't have any kids, so they had plenty of dispensable income.
Uh-huh.
So they bought one of those console TVs that had the turntable, the radio, and then a brand new color TV in the middle. So he organized a big watch party, we get there and turn on the color TV and the moon landing, and the moon landing is in black and white.
Of course. Not just black and white like the Dick Van Dyke Show, but it is grainy, it is snowy, it is ghost-like images. You really can barely, barely see it.
And that TV cost $1,500 back that
year. And was in
the shop 90% of the time, because if the turntable didn't work, they had to take the whole 10-foot wide console. So he was very disappointed.
Can I ask you something? I mean, just honestly, I mean, I was a 10-year-old dork on this, but did he expect it to be like a color picture, like he's watching a sitcom or something?
I think so. He was very disappointed.
I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, how many other moon landings did we have?
Well, five more after this.
But that was the first one.
No. How many? Only that one could be first. However, I'm gonna bet that the big, let's not bury the lead. It might not have been the crisp, clear color viewing experience, but I trust the enormity of the accomplishment.
Oh, yeah. Everybody else was thrilled. He was very disappointed.
Thanks, Debbie Downer. I'm teasing. I appreciate it. I love stories of that type. All right, I'll tell you what. Shane, let me go ahead and pause, because if let me just share a little something. I'm going to give you a factoid you can walk around with today. What were the first words spoken by humanity on the lunar surface? I don't mean the one small step for a man. That's setting foot on the lunar surface. Once they landed, if you're on Jeopardy may even get this wrong. Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed. That's the famous moment. Were those the first words spoken once human hardware hit the lunar surface? Well, no. There was a couple of things before that. So before we go to examining a little bit of Sunday night 49 years ago, let's go to the afternoon. It was a steamy, hot summer afternoon in Maryland. I'm guessing it was here. Shoot, here it might have been 147 degrees. I don't know. Summer 1969. And the afternoon where there was nothing to watch in terms of actual visuals of the moon landing. It was totally out of our view. So those wonderful old school simulations that some artist put together in a back room, that's what we had, as at roughly 3:15 or so Texas time, the moon landing happened. So what were the actual first words spoken by humanity on the lunar surface? They're not quite as poetic, but we'll revisit next. 8:48. Let me take you back. A hot Texas afternoon, July 20th, 1969. A lot of the kids might not have been out playing. A lot of the kids might have been gathered around the TV box. That night, it would be the ghosty black and white image of Neil Armstrong coming down the lunar module ladder. But about 3:15 Texas time, it was the landing. And here's what you have to understand as we prepared to land on the moon. Again, there's no visual of this, no live TV, but plenty of coverage. Walter Cronkite and everybody else obviously covering all of this. And what was going on is computers, run everything. It takes human beings to hit the buttons at certain times and do certain things and make adjustments. There's no substitute for humanity. That's why I've always been a big proponent of manned spaceflight. But as far as guiding the lunar module Eagle to its landing spot on the Sea of Tranquility, it was all planned out by a computer. Ha, ha, ha. One problem. The computer was guiding the lunar module right into a massive field of boulders. They would have crashed. They would have died. So at that point, Buzz Aldrin, lunar module pilot, under the command of Neil Armstrong, says, we need to take the stick and land this thing on our own. Problem is, you only got X amount of fuel. So you will hear the last minute or so of the moon landing. The capsule communicator, is Charlie Duke, who Texas boy, who would walk on the moon, might have written on it too, later on in 1972 as the lunar module pilot of Apollo 16. But you will hear him telling the crew how much fuel they have left. Translation, get that thing down.
Hey, 75 feet. That's looking good. Down a half.
That's Buzz.
Six forward. 60 seconds.
Lights on. Forward.
That's Charlie Duke telling him, you've got a minute. You've got a minute of fuel. If you're still in the air and the fuel runs out, the spindly lunar module crashes to the ground like a rock. 30 seconds.
Contact light. Okay, engine stop. We copy you down, Eagle. Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Now, in that streamlined excerpt, you hear, obviously, the highlights of the things that were said. There was a little mumbo-jumbo, a little technical gobbledygook, a little flight plan shorthand, and you'll hear Buzz talk about forward drift, and then he will say the first words spoken by humanity on the lunar surface. Those words are contact light. Contact light. Engine stop. And then some shorthand, the things called ACA out of detent, mode control, auto descent, engine command override off, engine arm off, 413 is in. 413, the flight plan line item. Charlie Duke says, we copy you down, Eagle. And then, Neil Armstrong says, about 15 seconds after the first actual words of man on the moon, Houston, Tranquility Base here, the Eagle has landed. And Charlie Duke replies, Roger, catch, because they figure these guys are going to die. These guys might die. Roger, Tranquility, we copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot. And they reply, thank you. And then do you know what Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin did? Really just, I mean, the first thing they got to do is immediately make sure that everything is cool, that we're not sinking into the dust of the lunar surface. We had every reason to believe that that wasn't going to happen. But hey, you never know till you're actually there. And there were some procedural things. It's like, look, if something goes south, something goes sideways, we got to hit a button. We got to blast off of this thing. The top half, the ascent stage of the lunar module. We may be only on the moon for 30 seconds, but at least we can say we came. Make sure everything is okay, blah, blah, blah. And then, okay, looks like we're good. You know what they did? They took communion. They took communion and thanked the God that made the moon they had just landed on and made them and made all of us 49 years ago today. All right. A couple more moments like this and some more calls. And speaking of, we can talk about stuff that happened 49 years ago. We can also talk about stuff that happened about 20 some hours ago. Judge Jeanine Pirro on with Whoopi Goldberg. Wow. And much, much more. It is 8:58. It is Friday. Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m. The answer.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.